This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Let's also talk to Jason Kelsey. Of course, he joins us every Thursday at this time, brought to us by Garage Beer. The garage is always open. Light beer like it used to be. Find Garage Beer at your local retailer or at drinkgaragebeer.com. That website again, drinkgaragebeer.com. Official beer of the Kelsey brothers and dads everywhere. Jason, good morning, bud.
Joe, how we doing?
Good, man. A lot going on. How are you? How's your week going, Jason?
It's good. I'm in the nasty natty right now. I'm back in my nice. College town. I was a buddy of mine's getting honored by the College of Business. It's homecoming week.
Good.
So yeah, having some fun.
You know, Jason, my first thought when you said that you had to be there, I thought, you know, for your buddy to be honored, which is great, you're there to support him. I thought, oh boy, this better not be a Wednesday night ceremony, because if it is, there's no way Jason's with us Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m.
Exactly.
But I hope you have fun with your buddies from back home, man. That's important stuff in life. Jason, let's get what a fascinating week for the birds. And you know, it's funny, we've been talking to Ruben here about, you know, what is Dave Dombrowski going through, because Ruben went through it, Dave Dombrowski's going through it. So, you know, we can ask a very similar type of question to you about the Eagles right now. We'll get to the actual football in a second. But you've dealt with firestorms in your career where, you know, you look left, you got Chip Kelly. You look right, you got Carson falling apart. You got Doug looking haggard at the end of 20. Like, sometimes things are great, and sometimes they're not. When the town is coming down on the Eagles, or on a specific person like Sirianni this week, how does that reverberate in the building? What are those guys going through this week, and how much can they insulate themselves from it and say, football, 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 and how much is it impossible to block it out?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer, because I think there's – so one of the beautiful things about sports is the moment you step on the field, you have the ability, like all that other stuff doesn't matter. And the Phillies don't have that ability right now because the season's obviously over, so they're going to have to sit with this for a while. But as a player, when you're playing in the middle of the season like the Eagles are, the moment you hit the field, man, I'm focused on trying to get better. Today, I'm here with my teammates, and you're able to kind of block that out. But especially in a city like Philadelphia, it's impossible not to hear it. Even when you, let's say you don't listen to WIP, which I've done many times in my career to avoid it, you're still going to hear it. You're going to hear it from friends and family. People are going to text you. You know, let's see what this guy said. And it's like, I don't need you to text me. Yes, I know what he said. So, you know, you're going to feel all the negative comments, and you're also going to feel all the positive comments when things are going really, really well. And I think a lot of it comes down to, how good and secure you are at handling these things. And, you know, I think I've talked about this at length before, but a lot of the best players really have a very good sense of, you know, self-awareness. Right? Because the media is going to say a lot of things that a lot of times aren't accurate or, you know, miss the mark. And then they're also going to say a lot of times they're like very, very pointedly true. And it takes a very aware individual of what is real and what's not, because you can get swept up. And like, I've seen guys and players before where they almost like anything that is said negatively, they push it away, and they're like, man, these guys don't know what they're talking about. And then the reality is sometimes they do know what they're talking about. And I think that, you know, you have to be really good at navigating what's real, what's not. Does it affect you? I think it probably affects everybody when it gets to a certain extent. You know, obviously I've been very open about 2016. I had a down year.
Yeah.
And even like, I remember, and I'm very good friends with, Equipment Grant equipment manager, Greg Delametris. Love Greg. And Greg said something. I just like snapped on him. And you realize that's not about Greg. This is about me, right? This is about things that I'm like fighting for my life right now to maintain the position of center for the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think you, all that stuff's going to affect you. You have to really maintain a clear focus on what you need to do to improve it. And is that difficult? It is. And some guys are better at it than others.
Jason, what the heck is going on with Nick right now? We had weird stuff. We had Nick telling us he made a defensive play call, and then we had Vic Fangio turning around and saying, "Nah, he didn't really make a play call. You know, that wasn't that what that was." You know, like refuting what he told us. A great look. It feels like it's sort of scramble mode right now. What is your take on what's going on at the top right now with the Eagles organization?
Yeah, in terms of, you know, what he, I don't remember what the actual quote was from Nick about calling a defensive play. So I don't necessarily know what that was about.
Well, Jason, let me say this before you even crank up that answer. We can play the audio. Let's actually play this, James, because we have both things. We have the Sirianni audio, and then we have the Vic Fangio audio. So, James, let's play.
Vic's response.
Go ahead. Jason, let's play it. So this is Nick. This is post-game. This is Sunday after the game, probably around 4:30. And here is Nick indicating that he had made two calls.
I'll say this. I made the call on 3rd and 1. Nobody else but me. And, you know, like I said to you, sometimes I did that on defense one time as well. You know, made a call on defense. That didn't work out, just so you know. I'll put that out there. That wasn't on Vic. I won't tell you which play. But I'm going to do that from time to time.
All right, so that was Sun. Go ahead, John.
Sorry. So I feel like, Jason, like this is so missing the mark. And I'm curious as to your feelings on, like, why is he doing this? And is this really helping us get better if he's absolving everyone else of, you know, of blame? I think this concept of saying, "Hey, just put that on me," there are people who actually need to be blamed. Like, it didn't work, and we're being told by Vic Fangio, like, you really didn't have much impact anyway. Like, what in the world are you doing?
Well, I'll say I think without knowing that.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
The details of the situation. I think Nick, in general, is a very accountable person, and anything that he has, input into what could have resulted in a negative play, he's going to take ownership of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is good, quite frankly.
I do too. I agree with that.
I think it's good for the head coach to acknowledge mistakes. I mean, it's a very important thing to happen.
Yes.
And it's important for your players to see that because they all know when it happens. I think that, you know, him calling a play, you know, that could be as simple as like obviously Nick's in this situation where he's in charge of game management, like, and he's in charge of certain situations that are, whether it's short yardage, like 3rd and 1, 4th and 1, you know, 2 minute timeout usage, like, there's certain things that he's in charge of where I think he's a part of some of these decisions where he might not literally be calling the play, but he might be signaling like we're doing something with the play. I don't know if that makes sense, but I think it might be something like that. And I don't want to speak on it because I really don't know, but I think that in general, I think, you know, Nick is trying to take accountability for the things that he's messing up so that the team sees that and then they in turn take accountability on their end. And knowing Nick, like I've been a part of his team meetings, you know, following a game, I can assure you, like, guys are being held accountable. Now, the media might not see that, and there's a discussion for maybe, you know, whether that's right or wrong. I personally like it when it's more internalized. and you're really taking full accountability in these team meetings, I think that that's one of the things I've said I like about Nick is that we do that as a team. Yeah. And we make the corrections and we show guys like who are doing really well. We show guys that aren't living up to it because there's just
I think that's amazing, Jason. The stories that we heard from Zach Ertz, he's putting your number up on the screen.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of that level of accountability before. But it begs the question, for all this accountability on the offensive side of things, why are we the only team in the league who hasn't scored in the first quarter?
That's a great question. What is up with that, Jason?
It is a great question. I wish if I knew it, I would run over to NovaCare right now to fix that. I think it's I've been a part of teams that struggle to start. A lot of the times, until they start, starting hot, they just don't have a rhythm early. And now it's one of those things similar to, you're in like a cold slump in baseball, right? Where, it's like in your head a little bit. But I think, the offense has some new pieces. They're trying to figure out with Kellen Moore and what we have with Jalen Hurts and AJ Brown and all these guys, what is the best thing to do? And I think that right now they've been getting to that as the game goes, and some of the games have gone incredibly well. Some of them, whether it's been injuries or whatever, have not been as, functional. I think, I would love, and I think I saw Lane maybe say this, but I would love to see them kind of go into some tempo. I think it's a really good way when you're kind of struggling to get momentum. Now, the problem is a lot of these early starts have been three and out, and you can't really go into tempo with a three and out. Like, you need to get a first down and then put the foot on the gas.
I don't think we've ever been good at that, Jason. Like, when you say tempo, you're referring to the 2-minute offense.
He's saying
about moving quick.
He's saying
get to the line, next play.
Some hurry up.
Yeah. Even if you say tempo,
some of it. But in Richie's defense, I do think 2-minute is a big part. Like,
well, sure,
your tempo offense. A lot of those plays tend to be the 2-minute plays.
Yep.
I think
Kenny Gainwell in there a lot of the times when they're talking tempo, they're talking 2-minute Kenny Gainwell a lot of the time. Is that what we're talking about?
No, it's not full on 2-minute. I mean, I think a lot of the passing concepts are I don't want to, I think tempo plays a lot of that offense is 2-minute offense, but obviously you're not calling any of the runs. There's a ton of runs that you can run with tempo, no huddle. And we've done this before. We did a lot and actually had a lot of success with Jalen and the offense before doing this, where you just like, hey, we need to spark a rhythm. We're going to go tempo early. And I say most of the time it works pretty well. And a lot of it is because it's a very generic offense that you kind of, instead of being, predetermined before the game, right? Like, that's first quarter, you're calling a lot of first 15 plays. And a lot of those are scripted and designed for specific things. And sometimes it's not what you get, especially when you have a quarterback like Jalen, or you have a high-powered offense, and you have a guy like A.J. Brown. Teams tend to play you differently when you have in pieces that are different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes that's a result why the first 15 struggles, they don't even use that terminology. I'm just so used to that with Andy Reid. But those openers, they're scripted and they're designed for what they think you're going to get. And when you don't get that, it's like, hey, let's get off of this. Let's just go into our offense. And that's the thing that I like about tempo, is that tempo is like a very generic form of like, these are our like tried and true plays. Everyone knows them. Maybe we didn't even rep this play this week, but we've run it against everything 1,000 times, so we feel comfortable doing it. And you can get to that in the heat of the moment as a play caller. It's like, okay, this is what they're giving me. Let's go into tempo. I know I like this, and this. I know I like this, and this. So, and the other benefit of it is your guys have repped it, a million times, so they're very comfortable running it. But that's one of the things that we've done before that I've always liked to kind of spark something.
It doesn't seem like at the end of halves it works as well as it should, though, Jason. Like that idea of moving faster and getting the ball down there and scoring points at the end of halves, I've always been frustrated with the fact that we don't convert the way we should. Do you agree with that?
I don't know. I don't know what the numbers say. I always felt like Jalen was actually pretty good in 2 minute. I don't know what the actual analytics are on that, to be honest with you, Richie. But again, this is a different, like, tempo. Although it's similar to the end of half 2 minute, like, they are going to be calling run plays. Like, it's not the exact same. I mean, it's actually, there's even different terminology between the 2 minute stuff and kind of what I'm referring to. So it's not exactly apples to apples, even though there's some similarities.
Okay. You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.